The following is an encore episode of Hour 1 of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy.
You've tuned to the Turley Frequency, starring your host, Kevin Turley, with guest stars Mike Romano and Reed Hodges, and special guest stars, the members of the FCC, whom we respect respectfully. Now, time to get tuned into the frequency. Call the show at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. Or text us at 251-928-2111. And now we cross live to the Archangel Radio Studios in downtown Fairhope to at last feel the Turley Frequency.
Yes, good morning and welcome. Today on the show we meet Dr. Ray Gurindi, who is a TV and radio host, and he's also an author, and he will be speaking about his latest book called Simple Steps to a Stronger Marriage. The doctor will take your call in the next segment. Top of the hour, we do the most important thing that we can do in this life, and that's pray. And we pray in particular the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and you are invited to join us. Feel free to text me your prayer requests on 251-928-2111. The lines are open right now. In the final segment today, we meet one of the directors of the horror movie Nefarious. Carrie Solomon will be joining us then. You have been warned. Okay, with all this good stuff, let's get this show on the road. Good morning and welcome. Now, if you've been following this show this week, you will have noticed that there are certain themes emerging. Certain themes that are beginning to strike me quite forcibly this morning. Now, this is not unusual. Every single week on this show, and I've just begun to realize this, we are given certain things that we talk about, certain things that we have on because they're the topics that the guests wish to talk about, or certain things that news items are directing our attention to. Now, I don't know about you, but I do not believe in coincidence. Never have. And certainly the more I've grown in my faith, the more I realize that there are no coincidences, that God has a plan for each of us and that everything is part of that plan if we have eyes to see it and maybe, working on the radio, ears to hear it. So let's have a think about what we've been talking about this week. Do you remember where we started? The rather gloomy predictions by the Surgeon General. His realization that America was in the grip of an epidemic, another one. But this time it was one of loneliness, one of alienation, do you remember? And then we talked about media. We talked about Tucker. We talked about the ongoing debates around that. We also reflected somewhat on our own media initiative here at Archangel Radio. We talked about the pledge drive last week. We had Elisa Murphy on yesterday, do you remember, talking about what Catholic radio could do, what Catholic radio has done for some of us, and maybe, just maybe, what it might do for you. We've also been talking about marriage. Is it any coincidence that 2 days on the trot we have had people in talking about marriage? Talking about yesterday, the beauties of marriage in a throwaway society, and today how to make marriage stronger. We also heard yesterday that oft-quoted remark from Sister Lucia, one of the children of Fatima, the last great battle would be around the family. The last great assault by the evil one would be around the family. Now, none of this is any news to most of us. certainly none of us who have lived long enough at the tail end of the 20th century and the start of the 21st century, because all around me I can see those battles taking place as part of this overarching war that is being fought. And the thing is, where is the linkage in this? Well, media and marriage, I think, have very much in common. But it gets even more stranger than that. Today on the show, we're talking marriage. But it just so happens, last minute, we're also talking, and I'm very grateful that we are, to the director of a new horror movie called Nefarious. The director, you will probably not know his name. What you do need to know is he's a devout Catholic. And that this horror film comes with an imprimatur, so to speak, well, a word of approval, from no less than Cardinal Raymond Burke. Coincidence? I don't think any of this is coincidence. You see, media in the last 60 years, principally through television and film, has been on a course to undermine the family, and in particular to attack marriages. Just think about it. Think about the last time you saw on television, recent television, or recent film even, a family which was the normal family, if we can say that these days, a husband and wife fully committed to each other in their first marriage, maybe, with children, open to life, helping to bring those children up in the right way. Now, this is not something sort of avant-garde. This is the norm across most of the Western world. But when do we see it depicted in the media? No. We see all sorts of variations, alternatives, perhaps more accurately described as counterfeits. Now, in terms of the media, we heard Tucker Carlson speaking this week, and we played the clip the other day of Tucker's kind of revenge, if you like, on Fox News. Fox News, you remember, got rid of Tucker Carlson a few weeks ago. They didn't explain why they got rid of him. He said goodnight on a Friday, and by Monday he was sacked. Now, in the media world, that's not so unusual. Listen, this could be my last broadcast, right? That's the way it goes. That's the way the cookie crumbles. You know that when you get into this game, and that's absolutely fine. But in Tucker Carlson's case, he had great ratings. Like, superb ratings. He was the star of Fox News. I told you about the great window in the Fox News headquarters in New York City and how all the hosts are there on these large windows. Who is dead center? Tucker Carlson. Or who was dead center? Tucker Carlson. But he's gone. Anyway, we played the clip about his new initiative. And do you remember what he said? He said some really interesting things. He talked about mainstream media being nothing less than thinly disguised propaganda outlets. They're his words, thinly disguised propaganda outlets. Ask yourself, propaganda for who? Propaganda for what exactly? Just hold that thought for a moment. He then went on to say that he was going on to Twitter. Do you remember? We don't know exactly how. And it's sort of, he's using Twitter as a platform. He's not aligning himself with Twitter. And that's probably for contractual reasons. As we went into the other day with Mike Church, he's probably still contractually obliged to Fox News. They just want to keep him silent. Tucker Carlson described Twitter as, quotes, the last remaining platform in the world to allow free speech. Now, I don't know about you, but I've been pretty critical of Twitter over the years. I see it as a sewer. People can say anything they want. People often do. People pile on, I think is the expression, to other people, criticize and hurt other people. People share stuff that they shouldn't ever share. People share mainly mundane stuff just to get clicks because they feel better in themselves that somebody somewhere is watching them, looking at them. But anyway, I said the other day that it was very important that we Christians embrace this crusade, if you like, for free speech. But I need to qualify that a little bit. I'm not really interested in free speech, you see. What I'm interested in is the ability to transmit the gospel. What I'm interested in is having platforms or the ability, the means, the communication skills so that we can proclaim the gospel. That's what free speech is for. That's why we need it. I'm not interested that some eco-friendly vegan wants to tell me about climate change on free speech platforms. That's fine. You do that, but I'm not that interested. I'm not interested that some communist wants to tell me something or some fascist. I'm not particularly interested in any of it. What I am interested in is that we are allowed to proclaim the gospel. Now, you might think, Kevin, this is a bit over the top. Nobody's stopping you from proclaiming the gospel. Maybe not yet. But listen to these three examples. Now, they're all British examples. But in some ways, we're further down the sewage pipe than you guys. And maybe when you hear these three examples, see them as warnings as to where things may go. Okay, we start in a school. And you remember the attack is on the family. And the attack is often on the young. And it's often a sense of confusion, which is one of the hallmarks of the evil one. We had the situation, I kid you not, in a fee-paying girls' school, a private school, where you think there would be some attention to reality. We had the example just last month, I think it was, in this country, where a female teacher came into a classroom full of girls and said, "Good morning, girls." Now, I went to an old boys' school, and the teachers would often come in and say, "Good morning, boys." What's unusual about that? She was sacked. You heard that right. She was sacked by the school. Not only that, but the head teacher, the headmistress, wrote to all the parents and apologized. That's because somebody in that classroom decided they weren't a girl. And how dare this teacher say, "Good morning, girls." Now, you might think that that's just a ridiculous example. Perhaps it is. But somebody lost their job as a result of it. Take the other example. We have in London many, many street preachers, or we did. Now, all the years I've lived in London, you see these people sometimes preaching on the streets. Not many, to be honest. But you'd see one or two occasionally. And they'd often be on their own, standing there with a Bible, shouting into a megaphone, or just shouting. Nobody could understand a word they said often, and most people would be busy about their shopping or doing whatever they're doing, going about their business. And in a city like London, nobody cares about anything. You know, you could walk down the street naked and nobody would blink an eyelid. So these were just part and parcel of the fabric of the street. And often in London, you get lots of people promoting certain things. I've been to Speaker's Corner in Hyde Park, and you get every weird and wonderful theory propagated in a place like that. So this preacher was reading from the Bible, reading part of the New Testament on the street. He was arrested. He was arrested, taken into custody. They knew they couldn't charge him with anything. But they took him a long way outside of London, dumped him on the street. His crime? Reading certain passages of St. Paul in public, which somebody objected to. Reading the gospel, reading the New Testament on the streets of London is a dangerous pursuit. But it gets worse. The third example. And remember, we're talking about free speech here. I'm not necessarily talking about religion. I'm talking about people saying what they think, what they believe, and being reprimanded for it. The third one, if that example of that street preacher who was arrested doesn't make your blood run cold, the next one will. It involves a young woman who I've met many years ago. And she was praying on the street. She wasn't kneeling. She didn't have any rosary beads in her hands or a Bible. She wasn't praying out loud. She was standing on the street with her eyes closed, praying. Or maybe reflecting, talking to God. Now remember what St. Paul said to all Christians, pray constantly. He exhorts us, as all the saints do, to live in the presence of God. So she's just doing something that all Christians should do, which is to pray, to commune with our Father, Lord, and our Savior. She was arrested. She had to go to court. You probably heard about the case. Free speech is important for us, if only to allow us to transmit the word. And the attack on free speech is not an attack on your views. I think the attack is much more insidious and comes from a much, much darker place. Now, do you remember we talked about the alienation with the Surgeon General? And you remember he said something, and his sort of rather facile ideas about how to counter this social isolation, he did say something which was important. And that was that we need to reappraise our relationship with technology. Now, we're talking about free speech. And the problem today is so much of our free speech is decided upon by other people who are the gatekeepers of the media. They decide who gets on the airwaves. They decide who speaks. They decide the reporting of incidents like I've just recounted to you. Do you remember what Tucker Carlson said? That if you don't report all the facts, you're reporting them for a reason. And we live in an age which he says that we've been lied to. So we've got confusion. We've got something that doesn't like preaching of the Bible, and we've got something that doesn't like prayer, and something that's lying to us. Any idea who that might be? I've got a few ideas. And is it any coincidence that we've got the director of Nefarious coming up in the final segment? Now, what we talked about was that sense of loneliness, especially amongst young people. Do you remember? We have a whole generation that's grown up knowing nothing else but computers and screens. They're called digital natives. And there was a headline this morning in one of the newspapers which estimates that there are 1 billion digital natives about to be unleashed upon the world. Digital natives, people who live online, shop online, work online, socialize online, date online, the list goes on. From morning to night, they are attached to one device or another, all plugged in and sometimes zoned out. They feel it's odd if they're not connected to something, anything, except reality. And in particular, the reality of the interconnectedness of us as human beings. Perhaps that sector of society could be more accurately described as digital captives. Now, you might think that's a bit extreme. Let me give you an example from Japan. The Japanese have invented a new word. It's called hikikomori. And it's a noun for a new phenomena. It's a medical term, in fact. And it's a term for hundreds of thousands of mainly men and adolescent boys who live lives as recluses with only their computers as company. Now, you might think that this is some sort of obscure medical condition that the Japanese have invented for a few cases. The Japanese government estimate there are as many as 500,000 such male solitaries. Ironically, this digital native celebration is going on in a society that feels itself freed from the childish hang-up of divine surveillance, as they would term it. They don't want to know about a God who looks after us, who looks out for us. Instead, they're happier with this presence that is watching them. Think about it. I don't need to labor the point. We Christians have a God which watches over us. I suggest that some digital natives that don't have that protection have something else staring straight back at them. That's why they're feeling so alienated. Confused. Sad. These are the hallmarks, not of our Christian faith and our God, but of something very old, very ancient, and very much our enemy. Okay, I hope that's put you in the mood to talk about marriage and the devil, because they're the next two subjects we've got coming up on the Turley Frequency today. Okay, when we come back, we will be meeting the doctor, and we'll be talking, getting the recipe, getting the prescription for how to make our marriages much, much stronger. Stay with me here on the Turley Frequency, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. The Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. It's very good to have your company this Thursday. Now, my next guest is Dr. Ray Gurindi, who is a Catholic father of 10, a clinical psychologist, an author, as well as a national radio and television host. You may have heard his radio show, The Doctor Is In, which can be heard in over 440 stations and on Sirius XM Channel 130. His EWTN television series is called Living Right with Dr. Ray, and it airs in 140 countries. Yeah, amazing. Down the years, Dr. Ray has given over 3,000 talks on various topics, including parenting, marriage, family, and the Catholic faith, captivating audiences with his humor-laced presentations that provide practical advice and proven techniques. And nowhere more is such advice needed today than in the realm of marriage and the family. So today we discuss his latest book, published next week by Sophia Institute Press, and it is called Simple Steps to a Stronger Marriage. Dr. Gurindi joins me down the line this morning. Dr. Ray, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing very well, Dr. Ray. Do we need another book on marriage?
Well, here's the difference, my friend. All the books on marriage tell you what you're supposed to do. But the one thing they don't do is they don't try to get you past your resistance to doing them. People will ask me in therapy, what's the hardest part of therapy? Is it trying to understand the person? I go, no, I've been given enough time, you can understand. Is it knowing which direction to go? I've been doing this for a long time. I'm not usually too stumped on which direction. They'll say, well, what's the hardest part? And I'll say, well, the hardest part's very simple. Persuading people to do it. And I think that's the difference in this book. These are small things, but you've got to get people past their resistance to doing them.
No, absolutely, Dr. Ray, and I couldn't agree more. In fact, we've had a theme this week on the show, which is about marriage and about the attack on marriage from so many sources. So before we get to how to build a stronger marriage, maybe give us an idea, with all your clinical experience and also your thinking around this, give us the moments in marriages when people need to be aware that the danger signals are sounding.
Do you know, Kevin, what the law of entropy is?
Tell me again.
It's the second law of thermodynamics. It rules the universe. It says that everything tends toward decay. Bodies age, iron rust, the sun will eventually burn out. There's something I've called the law of social entropy, which says the familiarity of a relationship can lead to laziness, sloppiness, a lack of effort in treating the other person well, less compliments, less manners, maybe not because of hostility, just because of laziness. And I think that's something that happens even in the better marriages.
Yes, and I think that's, it's not just true of marriages, I guess, Dr. Ray. It's also true of anything in life. The minute you start taking someone or something for granted, it tends to destroy and corrode relationships. It never enhances them, does it?
It decays. It I don't want to say it dies a slow death, but maybe it becomes comatose in the sense that if I have somebody in my office, I think, Kevin, about 80% of divorces are not because there's pathology, excess alcohol, multiple adulterous relationships, gambling, abuse, neglect. The majority are, I just don't like you anymore. I don't relate to you. We don't have much in common. You bother me. That's a lot of what it is. Now, the good news on that is that at one time, that relationship was a lot healthier. So you have the means to get it back if you want. That's the question, if you want.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And, the other thing which you must come across in your clinical practice is that emotions are fickle. You know, they come and they go. Commitment is something totally different, right?
C.S. Lewis talked about marriage, and he said one of the big mistakes we've made is that we've turned marriage into an emotional storm. In that sense, there has to be this strong, strong emotional connection for the marriage to be good and valid. He said, in much of human history, we married for a lot of other reasons. Social support. We married out of connection friendship. We married out of raising children. We married out of partnerships. We married for a lot of other reasons. He said, once we turned it into predominantly emotional, now we run the risk, because you're right, emotions are fickle.
I mean, in your research on that, Dr. Ray, I mean, do you think that process of this sort of emotionalization, if I can use that word, in terms of marriage, turning it into that emotional contract, do you think that's something that's been exacerbated, say, in the 20th century, or has it always been there?
I think it's very much been exacerbated. For most of our human history, Kevin, people needed each other. We absolutely had to have each other. Small example. You know, my neighbors may have been a half a mile away where I lived, but I had to connect with those neighbors. I had to get along with those neighbors, because if something happened to one of my kids, they were the closest person I could rely upon. So I couldn't be prickly with them. I had to work a little harder to get along with them. Same thing in a marriage. We had to work harder to get along. We could look at the person and say, oh, there's so much I don't like about them, but this is necessary for thriving as a human being. You know, I oftentimes say in marriage talks that I give, I say, in some respects, the women are just better communicators than men. They're more verbal. They're more able to express their feelings. They more are in touch with what they see needs to be improved. We guys, we're not as good at that. But in most of human history, we had a very defined role. We protected. We killed food. We built things. So that was our role. Well, now the women are pretty much as educated, if not more so than we are. They really don't need protected from wild animals or assaults. So in essence, what they're saying is, we want you guys to be more like us. And that's causing a lot of struggles in marriages.
Absolutely. And also the sort of crisis we have in masculinity. I mean, all these things feed into a kind of perfect storm, don't they, in terms of marriage? I mean, just listening to you, Dr. Ray, before we go on to how to remedy some of these problems, and particularly through a Catholic lens, I mean, I'm beginning to wonder. I mean, before you came on, I was doing a monologue about the way in which your surgeon general, just at the start of last week or whatever, was talking about the epidemic of loneliness and about the alienation in society. A few weeks ago, we had a young Catholic woman on talking about the horrors of online dating and just trying to find a Catholic spouse. It was very, very difficult for her, and she'd been trying for years. And I'm just wondering, are we just at the tip of an iceberg, which is a one where people don't actually believe they need other people, that marriage will seem kind of antiquated, in a sense, something from another generation where people actually spent time together raising a family? Are we moving to a sort of digital native world where marriage will be something redundant?
If I were to predict, Kevin, I would say that marriage would become just another option among many. It will not be the preferred option. It will not be the option that is the bedrock of society. It will be something that, if you choose to do it and you find someone who believes as you do, especially in a religious sense, then that's the direction you'll go. Interestingly enough, there have been many studies done on those people who are more satisfied by far with their partners. Do you know who it is? It's committed marrieds. They are the ones who say, yes, I am more content with my partner or the person that I'm with than the single player or the people who are living together or the serial monogamists. If God says do it this way, don't do it that way, he knows what he's talking about. And if he Amen. Says the highest form of contentment is marriage as I've designed it, then he's right, whether we like it or not.
And also probably in surveys, Dr. Ray, maybe you have some experience of this, I would say that committed Christians, be they Catholic or otherwise, they're the people who are preserving their marriages or staying married, right?
Yes. All right. If you start to narrow down, Kevin, religious practices, let's say things like attending daily mass, welcoming children, prayer daily, what you find is an inverse relationship. The divorce rate starts to plummet among that group. All right? One of the more obvious findings on that is natural family planning. Those married spouses, sorry for the redundancy, who practice natural family planning have a divorce rate under a couple of percent. So when God says, here's the way to do it, he knows. And, you know, the interesting thing is psychology, kicking and screaming, has had to come alongside God. They may not acknowledge that this is God's way, but they think they've discovered it on their own, when in fact, God's been here for a long time before they were.
I think that's really, really interesting, Dr. Ray, what you've said there. I mean, you're a clinical psychologist. You work with data. You work with various figures that come out of research. And the research is pointing towards the eternal truths that we Catholics always had, but perhaps we didn't value as much as we could have done. That sets us up nicely, Dr. Ray, for our next segment. I hope you can stay for that, where we will talk about the simple steps to a stronger marriage. And maybe you can help us. Anybody who's listening who's a Catholic or a Christian, but anybody who's not, these are going to be the steps by which you can make your marriage stronger today. Now, while we're here, if you want to speak to Dr. Ray, you can do on 888-928-0881 or text me and I'll ask him the question on 251-928-2111. We'll be back right after these words. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency. The Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. I'm in a fascinating conversation today with Dr. Ray Gurindi, who is no stranger to Archangel Radio. The Doctor Is In is aired every day on this network at 12:30 Central Time. And I'm sure many of you know him through his EWTN television series, Living Right with Dr. Ray, which has been on the air for many years and is very, very popular around the world. Dr. Ray is with us this morning to discuss marriage, and in particular his new book, published next week by Sophia Institute Press, which is called Simple Steps to a Stronger marriage. Dr. Ray, I have a question from our audience already. It came in on text, and it says, how does a couple navigate those times where you are really annoyed with your spouse?
You got to ask yourself, where's the annoyance coming from? If you're saying to yourself, they shouldn't be acting this way toward me, that can dramatically ratchet up your annoyance. You got to ask yourself, okay, how much of this is what they're doing, and how much of this is my reaction to it?
Mm-hmm.
So often in marriages, we take it personal. We get upset. Well, you know, if he really cared about me, he would call me and tell me when he's going to be late because he knows how I feel about this, and he's been doing this for 12 years. But what you're doing is you're getting yourself upset over something that may or may not be personal. It may be just his weakness, and you dwell on it, and you feel disrespected. One of my books I talk about, Kevin, is Unoffendability, which is when we get offended by our spouse, what we're really saying is they shouldn't do that to me. I don't deserve that. I don't do that to them. And then we get ourselves all upset. Now, I'm not saying what they're doing isn't right. It may be wrong. But we can dramatically make the impact a lot worse by how we think about it.
Absolutely. And also, I think we can say this, Dr. Ray, there's always a little voice talking into your ear on one side, saying, exacerbating these things, making them worse, exaggerating whatever the offense caused, because we Catholics, we have to understand, surely, that there is really a spiritual component to all of this. I'm sure you're familiar with the wonderful quote from Blessed Karl of Austria to his wife Zita as they got married. He turned to her and said, and now we've got to bring each other to heaven.
Yes. I would say, in a marriage, Kevin, somebody will come into my office, and they'll have a complaint. And I'll say, how long has this person been doing this? Well, as long as we've been married. How long have you been married? 32 years. You're still upsetting yourself over this. Well, they need to change it. Well, but they're not changing it. Now, for whatever the reason, whether they're weak, whether they don't care, whatever the reason. I had a lady call me once, Kevin, and she was very upset. She said, I've been married 54 years. My husband has never once apologized in 54 years. Drives me crazy. And I said to her, 54, a half a century, and you're still to the point where you expect your husband to apologize? Well, he needs to apologize. Well, I don't doubt that. But the reality is he's not. So how long are you going to continue to upset yourself over something that hasn't changed in half a century?
Absolutely. We could, there's endless, comedians and scriptwriters have had an endless fun with the vagaries of marriage and the endless clashings within marriage. But let's concentrate on your book this morning, Dr. Ray, Simple Steps to a Stronger Marriage. I'm a great believer that there's no such thing as coincidence. And I think books like this are very, very timely in our culture today and very much needed. And not just by non-Christians, because would you agree that one of the dirty little secrets out there is that Catholics also struggle in keeping their marriages together?
If you look at just the statistics, Kevin, the Catholics divorce at a rate the same as the culture. However, that's a little misleading because pretty much anybody who was baptized Catholic now calls themselves Catholic, even if they haven't stepped inside a church for 48 years. So in that sense, the identifier Catholic, people divorce similar to the culture.
Yeah.
On the other hand, those who take their faith much more seriously divorce a lot less than the culture. I'll give you an interesting statistic, Kevin. Do you know what the divorce rate was in 1960?
No.
5%.
Wow.
Has human nature changed in the last 60 years? What was it that in 1960 divorces were only 5% as opposed to 40% now? What happened? People were people then. We've changed our attitude toward marriage, toward commitment. I will say this to your folks listening. I don't doubt that the people listening to you right now, Kevin, are thinking, my family, my friends think I'm a fool for staying in this marriage. They think I'm an idiot for trying to persevere in this marriage. Especially after he's had an adulterous relationship and he's come back and he said, I'm sorry. And to people like that, I say, you are courageous. You are holding something together for your kids' sake, and most of the time they have kids. Do not let the culture bully you into saying, do it our way. Kevin, if somebody comes in my office and the guy says, and I get this all the time, the guy says, I'm going to leave my wife and four kids. I met somebody else. And he's not religious. He could care less. What do I do then? How do I appeal to his commitment? How do I appeal to any kind of moral sense in this guy to stay in this marriage? What do I do?
I've got no idea. I mean, ask for, he's better than that, appeal to his better nature somehow.
If there's a God, and if God says, I know what I'm talking about when I say it's best to do everything in your power to persevere in a marriage, then it's like the law of gravity. The moral law is still there, whether this guy recognizes it or not. So what I say to him is, how old is your daughter? Oh, my oldest daughter's 15. What does she think about you leaving your family? Oh, she won't talk to me. She wants no part of me. She says I've broken up our family. What about this woman that you want to live with? Does she have children? Oh, yeah, she has two. How old? 10 and 7. How's their behavior? Oh, they're obnoxious. They're absolutely little brats. Are you allowed to discipline them? No. She says, I'm not their father. I can't discipline them. So what I do, Kevin, is I point out to him, step by step, all the complexities that he is now inviting into his life by this move that he thinks is going to make everything better. It's going to make it worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've heard this so many times that people see divorce as a solution, or a second marriage or a third marriage as a solution. And it really is a triumph of hope over experience. And it never works out well. And as you say, there's a lot of casualties along the way as well. I mean, the children, et cetera, et cetera. But give us some hope here this morning, Dr. Ray. Tell us one simple step that we married people can take to enhance and improve our marriage, our Christian marriages out there.
90% of everything I've ever said, Kevin, that I regret, I said during peak emotion. I said when I felt this rush of heat that mm-hmm. I absolutely had to say what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Most of the time later, I regretted it. So one of the steps is, give the emotion 10 to 20 seconds before you say anything. And the reason for this is because the body is on your side. You can't stay at that peak level physiologically very long. You spike, and then you start coming mm-hmm. down. Well, if you can get past that spike, you'll have enough self-control to not say what you so felt you had to say, which later you would either regret or have to fall all over yourself apologizing for, or you hurt somebody deeply and now the relationship is for 6 days cold. So if you can just, one of my chapters is just don't say it. The saying is you never have to apologize for what you didn't say.
Oh, yeah, that's so true. So, Dr. Ray, I mean, within marriage, there's at times it can feel like a pressure cooker. No matter how good your marriage, there are going to be pressure points. There's, you're two human beings, man and a woman, difference in temperament, difference in understanding of certain things. There's always going to be pressure points along the way. So, I mean, is part of your job, part of your clinical practice, actually allowing people to feel those emotions, even if they don't express them?
Yes and no, Kevin. The old cliche is feelings are neither right nor wrong. They just are. That, I think, is a psychological cliche that doesn't work well in Christian marriages. Mm-hmm. What if I were to say to my wife, you know, honey, when I look at these pretty girls, I'm just filled with feelings of lust. But, you know, you don't have to worry about it because I'm not going to act on it. Those are just feelings. That's all. They're neither right nor wrong. And if she says to me, well, Ray, while we're confessing, maybe I'll just tell you that when you tell me things like that, I absolutely think you're the biggest jerk in the world. But, hey, you know, those are just feelings, and I'm not going to do anything about it. So either one of those feelings are destructive, whether you act on them or you don't. So what I do is I try to get to the root of the feeling, which is the thought. What are you telling yourself?
Yeah.
About these circumstances, about this person, about their conduct, that is fueling your reaction.
Yeah, and what you're saying, Dr. Ray, I mean, it's all there in black and white in the scriptures. I mean, St. Paul talks about that, about how feelings become thoughts and how thoughts become emotions and emotions become acts. And we have to be very, very careful about those sorts of things. I mean, what's also coming across from what you're saying is, maybe we need to be more discreet in our behavior with our spouses, not in the sense of hiding anything or being secretive, but that marriage is not about telling our spouses everything that runs through our head like some bad Twitter feed.
That would be incredibly stupid. 100% transparency creates a lot of problems. You know, honey, I just got to tell you what I've been thinking lately. You know, you're putting on a lot of weight. And I just want to tell you that it's really getting really hard for me to look at you and have any kind of physical attraction to you. I just wanted to tell you that. Uh-huh. How's that going to work for you?
Absolutely. You've answered the question. I came across an article just a few weeks ago. I forget who wrote it, but it was talking about it was a marriage counselor, I think, reflecting on one of the great dangers in a relationship. And it's something close to what you're describing there, Dr. A, in terms of anger. And it was the sense that one of the spouses felt that the other was treating them with contempt. And that this was a real sort of atomic bomb, if you like, in a marriage, that it would destroy a marriage totally if there was that sort of contemptuous feeling expressed or felt by the other spouse. What do you think of that?
This is something that bothers people, but it's reality, Kevin. Mm-hmm. You, my spouse, or anybody else cannot make me feel any way I don't want to feel. If I'm going to feel demeaned by you, I have to cooperate. I have to allow you the power to make me feel that way. I don't have to feel that way. I can look at what you're saying is that's ridiculous, and that's your problem, and that's your insecurity, and yeah, you lose your temper and you say stupid things. But how is that a reflection upon me? You know, Kevin, I get a lot of requests from people, have changed a lot over the years. It used to be, help me to change myself. Do you know what I get a lot more of now, Kevin?
Mm-hmm.
Will you tell me how to change somebody else?
Absolutely. But listen, Dr. Ray, do you think that our first parents in that wonderful Garden of Eden, they probably had the same issues, right?
Well, they certainly did after they ate the fruit.
They certainly did. That's right. Then he probably said to her, I think you're putting on weight with all that fruit.
Wear this. You're starting to look a little pudgy.
Well, they did. They lost their nakedness. Now, just a quick question, because we're running out of time. I'm really enjoying speaking to you, by the way, Dr. Ray. When should a couple seek help and from you? When can they want help from you, Dr. Ray? How and where, when should people seek professional help in their marriage?
I think when they're feeling lost.
Right.
When they're saying to themselves, I don't see any way out of this. I can't see how I can think differently, how I can act differently that's going to make any difference. Now, there always is ways it's going to make difference. They just haven't gotten to that point.
Yeah. Is it something people should pray about, obviously? I mean, a sense of discernment. Should they ask maybe their pastor, their priest, and say, look, we're having problems. Do we need professional help separate from the church?
The best prayer should be, dear Lord, help me to change myself. Help me to look at my role in this conflict. There's something in the book I talk about, Kevin, called personal apology percentage. That is, what percentage do you have to believe that you're wrong before you apologize? Now, most people, it's 50% or more. I think as a Christian, you apologize for any percent.
Yeah.
I yelled and screamed at you after you badgered me for 12 minutes and I couldn't take anymore, so my personal apology percentage is 12%. Well, I'm going to apologize for my 12%, whether you do for your 88 or not. So in the sense that the prayer always has to be, Lord, let me see myself, please. And I always tell this to folks. I say, you want to change your spouse. The best way you can do it, the most likely way that will work, change yourself first.
Amen. Amen. Dr. Ray, we're running out of time. Tell people where they can find out more about you, your work, your various media apostolates, and also where they can pick up a copy of Simple Steps to a Stronger Marriage.
My website, Kevin, is drray.com, D-R-R-A-Y.com. They can also buy the book at EWTN Catalog. So, and, you know, there's a million in my cellar, so it's a million seller.
Dr. Ray, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. I know you're frequently on this network, but it's a real pleasure and honor to meet you, and I hope you'll come back and give us some of your wisdom in the future.
Be glad to, Kevin. Thank you.
That was Dr. Ray Gurindi and his book, Simple Steps to a Stronger Marriage, published by Sophia Institute Press, is out next week. Get a copy while they still are in existence. Okay, when we come back, we are going to be taking all our problems to the divine mercy, and we're going to be praying for each other and with each other. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency.